on Friday, January 13th.
Don't say it.
Don't say it.
Don't think it.
Don't say it. Don't think it.
Bye bye, man.
Rated PG-13.
Greetings and welcome to a bonus episode of Shockwaves. I am your host, Rebecca McKendry, and with me is somebody who's never been on the show before, but I know really well, Dave McKendry.
We've met before.
Occasionally, we converse.
So is this a very special episode?
It is a very special episode of Shockwaves.
Great.
Like one of those schmaltzy 80s special episodes.
70s or 80s things. What's your favorite very special episode?
I got to go with Alf.
Okay.
Did you see the Alf one?
Which Alf one?
Okay, so in the very special episode of Alf, they did this Christmas episode of Alf. This is not what the episode is about, by the way. But anyway.
But I could come back and do a whole thing on
very special episodes. Yes. So on the very special episode of Alf, like Alf was usually really funny, you know, this furry little alien running around trying to eat the Tanner's cat and things like that. On the very special episode of Alf, the Tanners go stay at this cabin in the woods and they decide to take Alf with them.
And then these creatures come up and randomly try to kill them?
No. It's actually far more depressing than that. So while they're at this cabin in the woods, they somehow encounter this man who plays Santa, who was suicidal because his wife dies. And at one point he tries to throw himself off a bridge and Alf has to save him. And then there's also a little girl with leukemia that you know is about to die. And she talks to Alf about how she's scared of dying. And so I'm kidding you not. This is an actual Christmas episode of Alf. So if I have to say what's my favorite very special episode, that one. But when I was a kid, that one messed me up. I mean, I remember crying and being like, Alf's not funny.
I do remember that one. And I remember that it ended on Alf reciting, "Yes, there is a Santa Claus."
No, that's the Santa who tried to kill himself reads it at the end while zooming in on the little girl staring out a window while she contemplates her own death.
Wow. Okay.
It is like the worst episode ever.
Well, I have two very special episodes.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So the first one is What's Happening.
I wasn't aware that they went schmaltzy.
They did go schmaltzy when Rerun snuck a tape recorder into a Doobie Brothers concert and it fell out of his pants during the concert and everything stopped and the band stopped and they looked at him and he got taken backstage and he got a talking to about how wrong it is to bootleg concerts.
This is so topical today.
Oh, it is. And then another musical one, WKRP in Cincinnati.
I never actually watched that show.
I did. I watched it on Nick at Night. And they took their very special episode from an actual event. Was a promoter sold tickets to a Who concert. And he sold them as festival seating, which is you buy your ticket and you sit where you want. And it caused a riot in Cincinnati. And people actually got killed during this riot.
So they made a WKRP episode about it?
So they made a WKRP episode about the Who concert riot.
Where people died.
Where people died.
Wow. So all of your special episodes are
music related. Yeah,
this has nothing to do with our show.
No, maybe we should do the show.
So since it's the holidays and everybody's on break, we thought that we would do a bonus episode, and I wanted to bring Dave on because Dave, in addition to being like a horror movie expert, you definitely know your shit in horror movie and exploitation films, and you're
I dabble.
You definitely are, your big focus and area of research is morbid history.
Yeah, I enjoy reading on my own time a little bit about historical events that have more of a twisted side to them, supernatural side to them, just the darker side of history.
And you're especially focused in Los Angeles, which we've used a lot. Like you write for us a lot on Blumhouse. You're kind of like our history geek at Blumhouse.
Right. And it really goes back to when I move to an area, I kind of like to study its history.
When Dave and I, we lived in D.C. briefly, like right after college. And I remember when we first moved there, we were driving around. And for those of you guys who have ever been in Washington, D.C., it's a shit show the way that the roads are set up, where some of them move at diagonal and then there'll be these giant circles in the middle. And while I was like aggressively navigating the traffic, I very rhetorically said, who the fuck designed this city?
Pierre LaFont.
And Dave was immediately like, well, that was Pierre LaFont in blankety blank.
He actually modeled it after Paris, the streets in Paris.
Don't care. And, but Dave's kind of focal point has been morbid history, weird stories, things that were never explained, things like that. So I wanted to kind of do a theme episode and thought we would focus it on hotel horrors, because that's kind of a subgenre that I've always been fascinated by.
It's something we have a lot of in Los Angeles, a lot of derelict hotels, I'll call them. You know, those hotels that are right off, every town has one, they're right off the interstate. You go there if you're looking for certain illicit things.
Mm-hmm. Except in Los Angeles, they're right off Hollywood Boulevard and downtown.
And downtown, Hollywood Boulevard. We have some in the Valley as well. They're just old remnants of old Hollywood,
like
that just stuck around.
Like 1940s and 50s that have never been renovated.
Or even as early as the 20s, some of these hotels.
Yeah, and there's some really good ghost stories and true, just weird stories that surround, specifically one of them that we're going to talk about in a second.
Right.
But hotel horror has always been one of my favorite subgenre, and I'm not even too sure why. I think it's because you and I have traveled to so many hotels when we've done, like, the convention circuits, when we did our time at Fangoria and things like that, and we have stayed in some absolute shit shows.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've stayed in some terrible places, and what's funny about Los Angeles is that these hotels still exist because they make excellent shooting locations for all the hotel horrors and motel horror films that you love.
Oh my gosh, there's that one. There's one on Sunset Boulevard that Dave and I actually were really curious about, because we kept driving past it, and the hotel itself looked like it was just about to fall over, like termites holding hands.
It was that outdoor motel.
It was a motel.
You drive into, and it's surrounded by a wall, and it looks completely out of place next to a CVS and a Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And it's one of the old school drive your car up to your room motels that you go to the lobby, but
it's like
the manager's office in the center of it, and you're not even allowed in the manager's office. You're talking through
bulletproof glass
and those little circular old school bank teller
with the
windows
holes in it.
And it's actually the same motel that was used for Hollywood Land.
The one that I wanted Dave to focus on today, which has definitely become his area of expertise, is the Hotel Cecil.
Yes,
which is in downtown, and there's many pronunciations of this hotel, especially when, like, I've seen Dave doing the research. Like, some people say the Hotel Cecil or the Hotel Cecile.
Yeah.
We called the hotel this morning to make sure of how it was properly said. And it is at least the very nice man who answered the phone that I spoke with said it was the Hotel Cecil.
Which I can only assume was dressed as Liz Taylor.
I hope he was dressed as Liz Taylor. Because the Hotel Cecil and the real, true, really bizarre stories behind it is what went on to influence American Horror Story Hotel.
Yes.
And it's what the creators based the entire series, that particular season, off of, the Hotel Cecil.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit of H.H. Holmes from Chicago, but mostly from the Hotel Cecil, which was one of Los Angeles's oldest hotels, opened in 1924. And when it was opened in a very swanky area, which is where you get that grand lobby with the chandeliers and the beautiful carpets.
These staircases, too.
Right. And at the time it was opened, it was an upper class hotel serving as a residence, because during the 20s, people actually lived in hotels. People of means, people upper middle class, because living in a hotel at the time is actually very convenient. You have somebody making up your room for you. You have a place you can eat. You're convenient to downtown.
Somebody does your laundry.
Somebody does your laundry. Hotels at the time actually did a lot more services than they do now.
So it wasn't just like people who are down on their luck and don't have any place else to go. Like, you would live in a hotel if you were very affluent.
Right. And this all changes around the 1930s with the Great Depression, especially with the Hotel Cecil. You got me thinking of that name.
Hotel Cecil.
Especially with the Hotel Cecil, where during the 1930s in a depression, the area around the hotel actually fell into hard times.
It's still not that great today.
It is not that
great. It's getting a little bit better.
It is getting better down there. But at the time, it became what we now call Skid Row.
And the Hotel Cecil kind of opens up onto Skid Row. Like,
right.
One of the sides of it is pretty much Skid Row.
Exactly. That's what provided the downfall of the hotel, is that you can go down there now and you can see tents set up on the sidewalk. You can see people sleeping on the sidewalks there, just pretty much making a home.
Now, before I moved to Los Angeles, the only thing I knew about Skid Row, which I actually didn't know actually existed, was I knew that Skid Row was banned in the 80s.
Right.
And then, so I knew like what they referenced in their songs, but then I knew it from Little Shop of Horrors. But Skid Row is an actual place in Los Angeles.
Right, and they even put it on the maps as Skid Row.
And it, even to this day, it is just an encampment of homeless.
Right.
Just set up with tents and things like that, and we've watched documentaries on it. I watch these things all the time because Dave is so fascinated by them. So I kind of get the knowledge, like it spills over.
Yeah.
But
when we move somewhere, I like to learn everything I can.
Skid Row is still there and still located very close to the Hotel Cecil, but it is what started to cause the hotel to get weird, we'll call
it. Yeah, this is when the changes occur, when people start thinking that this place might be cursed, because we have a lot of people that started ending their life there.
At one point, it actually did get the nickname the Suicide Hotel, right?
It did, because people down on their luck, nowhere else to go, thinking this is it, I'm out of money, I lost my family, I got a few bucks scraped together, let me go get a room so I can go upstairs and die in a comfortable bed.
Wow, that's bleak.
It is bleak.
It's really bleak.
It is very bleak. But
because of... So it's like that suicide forest in Japan. It's like that in hotel form.
But in this case, people preferred to die in a bed as opposed to on the streets.
Understandable.
Yeah.
But because of that, the hotel, even as far back as the 1940s, started getting this like really weird reputation as being kind of this place where you would go to like die and that all of these horrible things happened. It was like really crimey.
So the hotel becomes a magnet for things. One of them is a rumor that started around the 1940s when Elizabeth Short,
the Black Dahlia,
when her body was found in a field, a lot of people came forward and said that the last place she was seen was at the Hotel Cecil.
But there's a lot of rumors surrounding this.
Right.
Like, a lot of people came forward with different theories.
Right.
About
I mean, nothing's ever
here.
Been proven about the Black Dahlia, but it's kind of an interesting thing to think that she was last seen at this one place with such a bad reputation.
Yeah, and especially since it is such a seedy place, connecting such a brutal murder with it, I think definitely kind of kept the weird reputation of the place going.
Right, and also when you think of some of the suspects that actually came forward in that case, famous doctors and politicians who may have been... trolling, as it were. It's a good place to go to find somebody that may not be missed.
Wow. So after it kind of gets the rumor associated with the Black Dahlia, what was the next like big weird event that happened at the Cecil?
Well, one of the weirdest events, and actually one of my favorite events, happens in the 1970s when a former mental patient from Oakland traveled to Los Angeles, went on Hollywood Boulevard to a gun show, bought a rifle for about $60, checked into the hotel, went up to the roof, and started shooting at the people below.
Did he hurt anybody?
He did not hit anybody. But his reason is actually the interesting thing about this. He wanted to prove how easy it was for a mental patient from Oakland to come to Hollywood, buy a rifle, get on top of a building, and start shooting at people.
That was his whole reason. He just wanted to prove he could do that.
He wanted to prove a point. He wanted to prove a political point.
Oh my gosh. So. Now, the story that you told me before that I found the most amusing was that somebody tried to kill themselves there, but in the process landed on somebody else.
That happened in 1962 when a young woman from Los Angeles had just had an argument with her husband, went up to the 9th floor of the hotel and jumped down. But on the way down, there was a 65-year-old man who happened to be walking at the time, and she landed on him. Both killed instantly.
Wow, that's uncanny.
Yeah.
And sad.
It is sad. It is very sad. But that's also another thing that kind of fuels the curse of the hotel, is that not only are these people killing themselves, but
they're taking out others on the way down.
They've got great aim.
Now, what the Cecil has probably become most well known for is that it ended up harboring not just one, but two serial killers.
Two serial killers. The first one was in 1984, was Richard Ramirez.
The Night Stalker.
The Night Stalker, who lived at the hotel for a year. And during that time would go out at night to the suburbs, I believe like Pasadena, Glendale areas, the surrounding suburbs of Los Angeles, and find his victims, kill them, would come back to the hotel, enter through the alley, remove all his clothes, his bloody clothing, throw them in a dumpster, then casually walk in his tidy whities covered in blood and go back to his room.
So no one noticed the naked man covered in blood going right back to his room. And He did this repeatedly.
And it kind of tells you what the condition of the hotel was when nobody notices a young man half naked walking to his hotel room with blood on him.
But then this wasn't the only serial killer right that lived there. There was a second one.
There was a second one. And this was actually a fan of Richard Ramirez from Austria.
Wait, there's a serial killer fans?
There's serial killer fans, copycats. I guess we'd call him a copycat. He came here from Austria and posed as a crime writer, a true crime writer.
Mm-hmm.
Contacted the LAPD, said, hey, I'm a true crime writer from Austria. I'd like to go on a ride along because I'm doing this book about prostitute killings. And so the LAPD was like, sure, come with us. We'll take you on a ride along. We'll show you the red light district. We'll show you where all these where prostitutes hang out. What the LAPD did not know was that at night after they dropped him off, he would go back out to the exact spots where the LAPD took him and find his victims.
And he was also staying at the Cecil.
And he was also staying at the Cecil because he was a fan of Richard Ramirez.
Wow. This hotel has so much going on.
Oh, yeah.
And but this is the most recent thing, and what I think really brought the Hotel Cecil to light, and what kind of really probably caught the attention of like Ryan Murphy when he was looking for locations for the season of American Horror Story, was Alyssa Lamb. Alyssa Lamb.
She was a 21-year-old student from Canada.
And this happened just a couple years ago.
This happened in 2013.
Yeah, because we were living in Los Angeles, because I remember hearing this story, and you then like spouting mm-hmm. out the entire history of the hotel to
right.
me. So this story is so crazy.
Well, it is what actually got me interested in looking into this hotel as well, because she had been missing for 2 weeks when the LAPD released this strange video of her acting a little odd in the hotel. She was it was elevator video, her walking through the hallway, ducking into the elevator, looking around like somebody was following
her.
She's
like talking to herself too, and she's like wigging out like she's obviously scared of something that's right outside the elevator. Like
right.
you see her looking around the edges and then ducking back really quickly like she's running from something.
Right. It looks like somebody's after her, but you never see who this person is in yeah. the video. But
that was the last video of her, because I remember it going up on the news and then being like, mm-hmm. have you seen this woman? She went disappearing at this like derelict hotel downtown.
Right.
Has anybody seen her? Or by then it was considered to be a hostel.
Right.
Which I'll even say the hostels in Los Angeles, they're spotty.
Some of them are too bad.
Some of them are, they're spotty.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't found until about a month later when hotel guests started noticing that the water in their rooms tasted a little funny. Had a weird odor to it. So repair workers went up to the roof, and to tell you how these work, these water towers work in hotels, it's actually cheaper to build a water tower on top of the hotel and let gravity bring
pull
the water
down
to the room. So
yeah.
that's why you, when you go to a city, you see giant water towers on top of buildings, because one pipe feeds the water up, and then several pipes use gravity
to pulls the water down, because it's easier to do that than pump it up to each room.
Exactly. So they went up there, they opened up the water tower expecting maybe to find a rat or a pigeon that might have fallen into it, and they find Alyssa Lamb floating in this.
In the water tower. How long had she been there? For like a month at
that
point?
She had been there for about a month at that point. The official cause of death was drowning.
So she was alive when she went into
right.
the water
Either
tower.
Somebody put her in there alive, or she went in there herself alive.
I'd like to take a moment to say that today's episode is sponsored by the Bye Bye Man. Don't think it, don't say it. To keep the evil powers of the Bye Bye Man at bay, you can't let him control your thoughts. But the harder you try not to think about him, the harder it is to keep him out of your brain. The one thing you can't run from is your own mind. Your fear makes him stronger. Your thoughts of him fortify his possession over you. And once you say his name aloud, his terrifying power is beyond your control. Once the bye-bye man gets into your head, it's like a virus that spreads through you and into others, making you behave in ways beyond your wildest nightmares. The bye-bye man is a new urban legend like Candyman and Bloody Mary before him that will strike fear into the hearts of movie audiences worldwide. The bye-bye man opens in theaters on Friday the 13th of January, 2017. It redefines the terror that the iconic date of Friday the 13th represents. Check out the Bye-Bye Man in theaters on Friday the 13th of January. After the Alyssa Lam thing, you see all of these kind of ghost hunters. And I don't mean to say that with a chuckle. I tend to be very skeptical of ghosts in general. I'm kind of a non-believer. I want to believe, but I tend to be a non-believer. Dave and I have had this debate before.
Wait, does that make you the Scully or the Mulder?
I think I'm the Scully.
Can I be the Mulder?
You can be the Mulder.
All right.
Yeah, you tend to be more kind of, I'll say you don't believe in ghosts, but you tend to be more slightly forgiving of it than I am.
I do want to believe.
Yeah, I tend to be like the, no.
I want to find the definitive proof, and yeah.
I tend to be the, there's no way. There's no frickin' way. So I tend to be kind of the more Scully to it. But when we've been looking at these before, like after the Alyssa Lam case happened, all of these ghost hunters like descended on the hotel, and then all of a sudden you see all this YouTube footage of like people walking around in night cams going, did you hear that? And then they turn and look at the ice machine.
I will say that it is easy to send ghost hunters places.
It is. We've done that before.
We have done that before.
So all these ghost hunters descend on the hotel, and then it like really becomes public knowledge that this hotel has this like awful reputation. And a couple of years ago, it was purchased by a corporation who kind of tried to give it a facelift. And so It's not even called the Hotel Cecil anymore. It's called Stay on Main.
Right, right.
I haven't been there since then. Have you?
I have not been there since then, but it seems that it has more of a corporate feel to it. It, like you said, is more of a hostel, bringing in people from other countries who may not know the reputation or the history behind the hotel.
Which they touch on in the American Horror Story Hotel, where they bring in the two girls from the other country
Right. Who
are staying there because it's kind of the cheaper place in Los Angeles. It still is a very cheap hotel, I will say that.
It's like, it's an expensive hotel, but it is a nice look at what society looked like in Los Angeles during the 20s, because it still retains some of that look of it, its original look.
You know, the weirdest thing that I remember about this is like a decade ago, and this is while it was still kind of the seedy Hotel Cecil, we came here for a Fangoria convention because Fango used to do these Weekend of Horrors, and we would travel around the country. And at the time, Dave and I were both working with Fangoria, and they did one at the downtown Los Angeles Convention Center, which is like the worst place in the world. It's like the worst place in the world to hold a convention because there's no parking. It's really expensive. It's just this vast cavernous place. But anyway, Fango had a convention here, and most of the staff was housed in the hotel that was like right across the street from the Staples Center. It was like a Holiday Inn.
Older hotel.
Yeah.
Well, side story here. Remember that hotel had a sliding door for its for the bathroom?
I do remember that.
There was no way to lock the bathroom.
There was no way to lock the bathroom.
It just had like one of those pocket doors.
Yeah. Anyway. So that's the one that we were in. But some of the staff ended up at the Cecil Hotel, and we didn't know anything about it. And it was just purely proximity when Fangoria was booking our rooms, where they were like, okay, well, some of you guys are here. And then
some people stayed at the Figueroa.
Some people were at the Figueroa, and some people were at the Cecil. And it was just kind of luck of the draw who ended up where. And I remember that Rob Feldman, who runs the Fango website, I remember him showing up at the convention and us being like, oh, which hotel are you in? How was your first night? And he was like, I'm at this one called the Cecil a couple blocks away. It's just weird, man. It's just weird. And I remember the whole staff like saying that like there wasn't anything creepy going on in particular, but I just remember everybody being like, yeah, it's just got this weird vibe. And I love that, even though I tend to be highly skeptical. I love that a place can have energy to it.
Yeah, what was strange is that we were all staying in hotels of the same era of the 1920s. But Rob was the only one that really had something weird going on.
Yeah, he just kept saying, like, I don't want to go back there, man. It's just weird. Yeah. So, like, there's definitely an energy to the place.
Yeah.
And I love that because we had that when Dave and I lived in New York, we lived in this super old building with a lot of history. Yep. It's actually right next to the Chelsea Hotel.
23rd and 7th.
23rd and 7th. We lived in this building called the Carteret.
Mm-hmm.
Which I have a feeling.
I used to call it the Cataract.
The Cataract. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's actually the Carteret or something yeah. like that. And we lived on the 7th floor of that building for many, many yeah. years. And the building was, it was very old. It was pre-war. And there were all of these crazy stories. And the building just had this kind of creepy feel to it, which is probably why we stayed there for so long. It had been like renovated numbers of times. Like, so our actual place was nice. But building
the room
had
still
this
retained
weird
a lot
feel.
Of the rooms, I'll say, because it was a studio.
Yeah, the room.
The room still had that feel of the, it had the old water heater, not the water
the
heater.
Radiator.
The radiator. The metal radiator that when you turned it on, you listened to this weird non-rhythmical sound
clanking
all night.
For 20 minutes while it warmed up.
Right.
Yeah.
And pipes going through the rooms and the old bathtub.
The bathtub in that place was my favorite element because it was seriously like, it was a deep tub. Like mm-hmm. you could drown in that tub. Like I remember sitting in it being like above my nose line.
And that building, that building was actually built late 1800s, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it and you just go into a place like that and you write all these stories in your head. You write out the history of this room you're in just in your head. It's not even real, but it just feels real, like just your imagination running wild.
And Dave and I used to do this. This shows what geeks we are, where we would actually sit in our studio apartment in this building and write up stories about people who used to live in that
right.
room.
My now, favorite one was I thought of a woman who aspired to be a Broadway actress who just couldn't get past being a chorus girl.
Yeah.
Just sitting there combing her hair in a mirror and right across from the old window and radiator just repeatedly.
Yeah. So we had all of these fantastic stories. But yeah, it just, there's energy in places like this.
Yeah.
And Los Angeles, when we first got here like 5 years ago, they did have a bunch of these kind of rundown, rumored to be haunted hotels. And a lot of them are getting faceless now. Like there's the creepiest one, which I never went inside of because it always looked so frightening mm-hmm. from the outside, was the one that was across from the post office when we lived on Fuller in Hollywood.
Twain.
It was called the Mark Twain. That was
the Mark
it.
Mark Twain. Yep.
It
was right near the Ivar Theater.
Yeah.
And I always remembered it because Ivar Theater was mentioned, was referenced in a Tom Waits song.
Mm-hmm.
And the hotel itself just looks like a Tom Waits song.
Oh my God. Yeah. It seriously, it looked just like you were going to show up with your old beat up mm-hmm. suitcase and patches on your jacket. And it's now getting a renovation as well. So we're kind of losing some of these old haunted hotels mm-hmm. of Hollywood, but there's definitely still a few
it's
around.
It's a shame. I mean, there's so much history that isn't the history that you get back east, isn't like the Civil War or Revolutionary War history, because Los Angeles is a relatively new city.
Mm-hmm.
And so the history to it is fairly recent. It's a century. What's a century in terms of history? But it's still fascinating. It's still something that we should remember and in some areas preserve.
So I've always been completely fascinated by hotel horror movies as well. And I think that a lot of it came from when we were living in New York City, because a lot of the apartments there, because they are mostly studios, feel like you're living in an apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember being there and we like binged watched a whole bunch of hotel themed horror movies.
Oh.
And a lot of them was because when we were looking for apartments in New York, we were actually staying in a hotel for an
right.
extended period of time. Remember that one where we walked into this one hotel in New York City and Dave goes, are you going to, like, I open the door and Dave goes, are you going to step into the room? Like, he's standing behind me holding all of our luggage. And I turned around and I was like, I already did. Like, you could not step
right.
into the
as
room.
As soon as you
opened
were in,
the door.
And you're looking at
the bed.
There
was a bed.
Yeah.
There was nothing else there. Like, you literally had to fall forward onto the
right.
bed.
And we were so naive about New York that I remember there was a mouse somewhere
yeah.
in the room.
It ate all my pretzels. And we freaked out.
And we complained about it. And it wasn't until we lived there that we realized, well, you just kind of live with them, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. You try to, like, you minimize the amount of food you leave out.
Right,
so you
right.
don't see them, but, or maybe that was just the caliber of apartments that we were able to afford when we lived in New
York. Well, I learned from talking to other people who lived in far nicer places that, yeah, you just learn to deal with it. So when we went to the manager at the lobby and were complaining about this mouse in our room, we must have sounded like the biggest yokels.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, he was in our room. So, I right. mean, like the other places we lived, we didn't see them in the rooms. We'd see them like in the trash room or the laundry room.
Right.
But not our rooms.
I will tell you, in one place we lived, I got really freaked out when it was the Ketterette, and we had the laundry in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And
which was really frightening anyway, because when you went down into that basement, it was like entering steam tunnels. Like, it looked
yeah.
like Freddy's boiler room down there.
It really
and you'd
didn't...
go down there like to do your laundry. But at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday, it still looked like Freddy's boiler room.
Right. And the way I remember it is it didn't even look like they put a room down there. It looked like some guy from the 1800s chiseled it out with a pickaxe,
because yeah.
it still had this like dank, damp cave quality
stone
to
walls.
It.
I remember
stone
the stone walls.
Walls
and then a washer in the middle.
Yeah. And but it was a great building. I love the building.
Yeah, we loved that building.
I would live there again if I could. But what was really funny about it is that there was a bodega on the street level
mm-hmm.
right above where the laundry room was. And I don't know how this happened. I guess when the man with the pickaxe was carving out the laundry room, he busted a hole between the bodega, the floor of the bodega, and the ceiling of the laundry room.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just look up and you could see the people in the bodega.
I remember know. This. Oh yeah. my gosh. Because they yeah. would be in the storeroom and you could like look up through the hole in the floor and see like where they keep the sodas.
Yeah. And
you'd, like
you would hear the conversations of the guys up there, you know, getting the bagels ready in the morning while you're doing
reanimate.
Your laundry.
This was a reiterate. This is not like a horrible place in New York. Like, we lived in Chelsea, which at the time
oh,
had
yeah.
already like, this was a nicer neighborhood.
Oh, Chelsea is a beautiful neighborhood
yeah.
to live in. If you ever have a chance to live anywhere in New York.
It was just a zany building.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
It's zany if you're coming from outside of New York, but it's something you actually get used to or you think as a norm.
So yeah, there was this hole in the ceiling. I remember
yeah.
this story. I remember you being so freaked out
yeah.
this night.
Because they had a cat that lived in the bodega.
Sammy
the cat lived in the bodega, which, again, in terms of living anywhere else inside of New York, outside of New York, having a cat in a
7-Eleven is a little weird, but
a little out of the ordinary.
In New York,
but,
it was, yeah, he kept
yeah,
the mice at bay.
He did, and that's actually why a lot of bodegas in New York have cats,
yeah,
is they keep the mice and rats away. And he liked to travel.
Sammy was a nice cat.
He
yeah,
was
he was
cat.
All over the building, though.
Oh, yeah. And one time I was doing laundry, and I hear this loud thud behind me. And I'm like, oh shit, there's something huge that just jumped down behind me. I turn around and Sammy is just up there with a mouse in his mouth.
Oh my gosh.
That apparently he had just pounced on while it was walking across the top of the washing machines. And I guess he thought he was saving me or something. But I look back and he's just there staring at me like, what?
Oh my gosh. Sammy's probably long dead now.
No, Sammy's dead. Sammy
yeah, that was like
dead.
A decade ago.
Yeah.
He was an adult cat at the time. So, but anyway,
and a very well fed cat.
He was very. It was a big cat.
Yeah.
He really liked to have his belly scratched. But anyway, cat stories. So while Dave and I were living in this place, we got really kind of obsessed with watching these kind of hotel horror movies because
yeah.
I think we kept trying to write our own because we were living in such like a weird environment, or at least it felt.
We
very
were living
weird.
In a Hennenlotter film.
We really were. It did. It felt like a Hennenlotter film.
Yeah.
So because of that, we kept talking about writing a hotel horror story and things like that. And we ended up watching a whole bunch of them. So we thought we would spend a little bit discussing kind of hotel horror movies that we really liked. I mean, there's, of course, like the quintessential ones like The Shining and Psycho.
Psycho, yeah.
Which are the ones that you naturally go to. And I still get completely freaked out in motels, somewhat because of Psycho, but mostly because my parents would always stay in motels whenever we went on vacation. Like, I have so many memories of motels,
yeah.
but because they open to the outside world.
Exactly. Anybody could be walking through the parking lot
yeah.
and past your room.
It was just so freaky. And so Psycho, it sticks with you because of that, because it's this idea of there's just one door separating me from the entire
That's
world.
That's why I always go second floor.
You always?
I always ask for the second floor. I do not want to be on the same level as some guy walking down the sidewalk.
So freaky. Motels still freak me out because of that. But one of my absolute favorite Hotel Horror Movies is 1408, which I know it's kind of polarizing. Like, some people really don't like that
film.
Oh,
I thought it was great.
It fucked with my head so much, because not only is it, like, in the hotel and there's definitely this kind of unknown quality of the hotel, but it, like, warps reality.
Yeah, and it uses ghosts.
Yeah.
And ghosts can be either silly or they can be scary. And it made them scary.
Yeah, and they're kind of just like holographic.
They're holographic. It's like, you know, Tupac at Coachella looking ghost, but they're still frightening.
That is so, well, Tupac at Coachella, was he?
He was pretty frightening.
He was a little frightening. That was a little weird. But yeah, that is what they look like. They're just these very holographic ghosts, but somehow in that movie, they are very effective. Mm-hmm. Now, one of my absolute favorite hotel horror films, which you never even think is being kind of a hotel thing because there's so much other like wax stuff going on, mm-hmm. is The Beyond.
Oh, yeah.
But whenever I watch that movie, for the first part of it, I'm always like, we should open a bed and breakfast. Like, you and I should go like full Newhart.
Creepy.
Just to open a bed and breakfast somewhere.
Creepy redhead kid and
acid
faces. And
face-eating spiders and all that stuff. Yeah, that can happen.
Yeah, let's have a go.
Let's go open a bed and breakfast. But like, it starts very quaint where it's like this old-timey bed and breakfast in New Orleans. And it looks so sweet. And I mean, yeah, there's like, you know, portals to Satan and all that stuff. But yeah, let's go full Newhart. Let's like move just outside of Los Angeles.
Second I see a blind woman with a German Shepherd standing in the middle of the road, I'm done.
We're done. That's it. We're selling our Newhart hotel and we're out of there.
Well, think about it's such a great device for the 90s and the early 2000s.
Oh my God, all those neo-noir films always, they always were set in motels.
Right. Usually the same motel, but
there's actually this motel just outside of Los Angeles. It's like right outside,
before
you get to Joshua Tree, right?
I want to say there.
We saw this like crazy
29
like,
Palms area, maybe.
Yeah. It's this one hotel that like all of those 90s noir films shot at.
Yeah.
And it's a fortune. Like, Dave and I were curious one day, so we called to see how much the shooting rates were for that hotel, and it was like $5,000 a day.
$5,000 a day, anywhere up to $15,000 a day, plus you pay like location fees for somebody. It was ridiculous, but people went out there. People shot there.
But it does have a lot of, I'll call it character, too.
Oh, it does. It's beautiful, actually. They have a great website. You go on there and you can look at all the pictures of it, but they have like a bar, they have a diner, they have a motel. It actually looks like a nice place to stay, but it's not a place you can stay at, obviously.
So another one of my absolutely favorite ones is Identity, mm-hmm. which was another kind of polarizing film, but I remember
also shot there.
It may have been. I remember when that movie came out, we saw it in college, and now, if I saw that twist now because it's been done so much, I would be kind of like, wah, I've seen that before. Mm-hmm. But I remember when it came out and you and I watched it in college, we were like, oh my God, I was not expecting that. My mind's blown.
Right. Well, also, that one was so well acted. I mean, it had a great cast.
Oh my God, what's the guy, the main guy?
Pruitt Taylor Vince.
I love him.
He was in that. He's a great actor. John Cusack was starring in that one as well.
And, yeah, it had a really good cast.
It did, and
I liked that one because it worked as kind of a whodunit, but with a major twist at the end. And it had a very noirish feel, too. I remember it being very dark with rain and things like that.
Right.
Had a lot of mood. Eaten Alive. And this one, you've actually written articles on because Eaten Alive is actually based on a true story as
right,
well.
Right, but that one actually takes place in Texas.
So we'll save that one for another episode because there's this whole story of this guy.
Toby Hooper?
Yeah.
First movie? Yeah.
And it's this true story of this guy who was actually like a serial killer who killed people to feed them to his alligators.
Right.
And Toby Hooper decided to make a rather amusing movie out of it.
Yeah.
So we'll save that one for another episode, but you can check out the article on Blumhouse.com. But I gotta say, one of my absolute favorite hotel movies, it's not even really a true horror film. I'll call it more of a thriller. And you and I watched this in college, Million Dollar Hotel.
Nope.
You don't remember?
I don't remember Million Dollar Hotel.
No, you and I definitely watched this one together. I think it was maybe late 90s, early 2000s. We definitely watched this one together. It has Bono in it.
Bono?
Like the U2 guy.
Okay, so not the congressman.
No, that's Bono.
That's Bono. Okay.
But it's also, and I know we watched this together. Were you stoned? You were probably stoned. Anyways, we watched this together, and
Was Hilary Swank and Clint Eastwood in this?
No.
No, that's Million Dollar
Hotel. No. Million Dollar Hotel. And it was, It was about kind of a rundown derelict hotel where all of these people with mental disabilities stayed. And I remember there was this whole statement on like how they couldn't afford health insurance, so they just all kind of lived there.
I'm looking it up right now, and Bono actually wrote the story for
it. Are you serious? He's yeah. in it. I just remember like he walks through the lobby at one point and he wrote it? That would what the hell?
I guess that would be the social commentary.
Yeah, so I just remember him being in it, but it's got Mel Gibson in it.
Right.
And Mila Jovovich is in it.
It's funny. I'm looking at
Jeremy
this cast.
Jeremy Davies. Yeah.
I'm looking at this cast right now. Jimmy Smith. I don't remember this film.
No, you and I fucking watched this together. I know we did. I know we did. So the setup.
So who is he?
The setup.
Who was he?
It was you. You okay. were probably just drunk high otherwise. So the setup of Million Dollar Hotel was that all of these mentally disabled people were staying in this one hotel because they had nowhere else to go and no health insurance, so they couldn't be treated. So they were just staying there. And one day there is a murder, and it's the girl that everyone at the hotel is kind of in love and obsessed with, who stays there, is murdered. If I remember correctly, she's like thrown off the roof of the building or something like that. And then it is the entire investigation, because they think she was killed by somebody in the hotel. So then the Mel Gibson character, the detective, comes in and tries to figure out who committed the murder. And so it goes through all of these different kind of characters in the hotel while you kind of get all their backstories and their relation to this girl. But the whole thing is told through this young boy's eyes. And he was like obsessed with her. And it was played by Jeremy Davies. And
I've got to watch this movie. It sounds interesting.
Seen it. Oh my God. So it works as like a murder mystery. But at the same time, I remember it being very charming. But it's definitely got these kind of horrific elements to it as well, because it is a murder mystery. I really liked this movie. Well, it had a really good environment.
According to IMDb, if you like this movie, you'll also like 2003's The Singing Detective.
I don't think I've seen The Singing Detective.
Starring Robert Downey Jr. and Mel Gibson.
Yeah, this was definitely kind of like a traditional detective whodunit, but it just had a really interesting environment and characters because it was a hotel, and in that it had this kind of like creepy quality to it. Yeah. So you're going to watch it again because right. you've seen it.
I'll watch it. I'm always down to watch something for the first time.
So on that note, check out Million Dollar Hotel, because apparently yeah. Dave hasn't. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us on this very special episode of Shockwaves, where we went into hotel horror films and one of the weirdest hotels in creation, the Hotel mm-hmm. Cecil. So if you're coming to Los Angeles and any of you guys end up staying at the Hotel Cecil, which is now called the Stand on Main and is supposed to be a lot nicer, I would love to hear stories. I'd love to find out like what weirdness you see
around the hotel.
Or if you
find another motel or hotel in the area that we might have not touched on.
Yeah, if we need to look into another one and start researching. Yeah. So watch American Horror Story Hotel and see kind of what the Cecil evolved into when they put it on air.
It's also a good book idea.
It is a good book idea, Dave. You get on
stroking
that.
Stroking my chin.
You get on that. Yeah. So thank you guys for joining us today. We will be back with our regularly scheduled programming next week with all the guys back. When we
thank
come back
you for having
break.
Me on.
And thank you. I was getting ready to thank you.
Oh,
don't
I'm
jump
sorry.
The gun.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Dave.
Oh, well, I'm thanking you for having me on.
Oh, okay.
And if you want to follow me on Twitter.
Yeah. What is your Twitter?
Die Dave Die.
So follow Die Dave Die on Twitter, and you can
read for the Dave. The
yeah, you can read all of his macabre history, real stories over at Blumhouse.com.
Blumhouse.com.
Yeah, and please remember that today's episode was sponsored by The Bye Bye Man, which opens in theaters on Friday, the 13th of January. Check it out. Thanks, guys.